to Channel Facilities Management. Oh, didn't I say? I don't work for them. What I mean is, I don't start work without them. Channel Facilities Management is where local businesses go for no-hassle, peace-of-mind commercial cleaning, security, janitorial supplies and facilities management. Operating a safe, green and eco-friendly service with no chemicals used. Channel Facilities Management. Don't start work without them. Just call 0800 612 4415 or visit channelfm.co.uk.
Interested in collaborating with like-minded Kent businesses? Join our supplymybusiness.co.uk community today and start growing your Kent business network for just £20 a month.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show on Biz Radio, Channel Radio and kentbusinessradio.co.uk. With me, Paul Andrews, and...
And me, Bird.
And my co-host, the lovely Bird.
I'm loving that.
It's good.
I'm loving it.
I've finally got it at last.
By Joe, I think we've got it.
Yeah.
What film's that from then?
You're co-hosting next week as well, aren't you?
Yes.
I think.
I don't know.
What's the date next week? Is it the first week of August?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, it is. No, it's Jules is back. Jules, and then you're co-hosting again.
Yeah, I'm in between everybody. I'm here quite a lot now.
I better go into training if Jules is back. Oh, goodness me. Okay. Good. Anyway, what you got?
Oh, here we go. Right, this is the longest one.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll just go. So just
go
enjoy, sit back, have your cup of tea and enjoy this. Are you a manager who would like to feel confident managing staff? Whether you are new to managing people or you would like a refresher, this HR course for non-HR managers will be a benefit to you. Why attend? As an employer, the worry of employing suing you can be one of your biggest concerns, and great leadership results in great team. So this course is designed to give managers confidence and peace of mind in managing staff. What will you learn? So by the end of this course, managers will have solid foundation and basic understanding in HR and employment law. You will also have 5 months support with HR and employment law queries. We will cover the following topics: interviewing and selecting the right people, understanding the importance of documentation, how to work within the parameters of employment law, effective absence management, dealing with challenging issues, equality, diversity and avoiding discrimination. So releasing a key person from your business for a whole week can be tough. So we have decided to host this course for 1 day a month for 5 months, allowing you to put what you have learned into practice and then come back and ask questions the following month. The course dates are as follows: 3rd of July, which is gone, obviously, 7th of August, 4th of September, 2nd of October, 6th of November. Now, each day will begin at 10 a.m. and end at 3. Great times, Gemma. And this is at the Regis offices, Kings Hill, West Malling. It's £249 for the month, including lunch. So that's £249 per month. So you need to go and book with Gemma at info@orchardemploymentlaw.co.uk or go visit Gemma's site, Gemma Fairclough Haynes at orchardemploymentlaw.co.uk.
Thank you for that, Bird. Funnily enough, I've just had a tweet from Gemma as well.
Oh, is she?
Yes, she's well. And she says, Vanilla Web, please can you also mention a shout out for the free Women in Business Open event on the 9th of August at 7:30 p.m. at the Ruffin Club in, I think that's in Rochester, isn't it? The Ruffin Club. Yeah, in Rochester.
I know Gemma's talking at one of them soon. I don't know if it's that one or what.
I would think it is. So that's Gemma Fairclough Haynes. Her Twitter handle is Gemma Fairhay, F-A-I-R-H-A-Y, Gemma Fairhay. Gemma Fairclough Haynes of Orchard Employment Law, of Women in Business, free open evening on the 9th of August at the Ruffin Club.
Nice.
Check it out. I've got all the emails left now. You've only got
one. No, I've got two.
Oh, you got two?
Yeah, that you've given me with yellow and black ink, but thank you for that.
Do you know what?
No, I was going to just say, you know, Laura's just tweeted in. She's put, Laura Burton Lawrence has just tweeted in, just back from a run and chewed in. Day 2 of not smoking. Looking forward to the rest of the show. Hey, Laura, how are you, darling? Congratulations. Big things.
Yeah. Stay not smoking, Laura.
Yeah.
How did you do it? I went cold turkey.
I just
stopped. I went from 80 to zero.
Just
I used to smoke 80 a day.
Done.
Yeah, I just stopped. Yeah. It helped being seriously ill, of course.
Yeah.
That always helped as a motivator. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Give us a shout, Laura, if you need any help, love.
She's so fit in every sense of the word as well. She just needs to bin the smoking. Don't look at me like that.
Here we go. I'll try and read this yellow.
She used to play rugby, you know.
Did she?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought she was a rugby bird.
No, it's because she's quite slim, isn't she? You wouldn't have thought she had a bill for rugby, but she did. She played rugby. I can't remember. If you're listening, Laura, you'll have to tell us. I can't remember if it was London Irish or London Welsh ladies that you played for.
And what position?
Yeah, and what position?
That'd
God,
be good to know.
Wouldn't it be good if she was number eight, wouldn't it? Would it? Really?
I'm pretending like I know what rugby...
Yeah, most people wouldn't know what that was. It would be the hooker.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry. Old joke.
I get it now. But
old
I'm
joke,
chatting.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Iconic German business unveils first ever branch in Dartford with Kent couple at the helm. That was in yellow ink, can I just say?
But you read it.
Thank you very much.
So your eyesight must work. It must be mine that doesn't.
I know it does, yeah. Yes. Global household appliance manufacturer Vorwerk. Vorwerk. Now, yeah. I know that's how you pronounce it because I used to live in Germany. Opens at Dartford branch. You never knew that, did you?
I didn't know.
No, do you know what, though? I can't speak a word of German.
Right.
I'm sorry, but we're in the forces.
Not even Volksbrock, Don't Technik or whatever.
No. Entschuldigen Sie bitte. That would be about it, really.
Yeah.
A Kent couple are thrilled to have launched their very first business together in the heart of their home county. Kate Vine and Dean Cowell have taken over premises in Dartford Victory Way to directly sell high-quality products from German appliance maker Vorwerk. The dynamic duo has ambitious plans to create new roles in the area too and have been signing up a team of super sales advisors in the run-up to their branch unveiling, which is officially opened on June the 26th. So as Katie takes the day-to-day running of the office, Dean has his team out across the counties in Kent and they demonstrate and sell the Vorwerk range and top quality products. Combining German engineering expertise and ingenuity has the products needed to keep the modern home clean, hygienic and ready for everything that life throws at you. I love it. Do they do it for you as well?
Mm.
Is it the are they robots? That's what I'd like.
They used to demonstrate that on Tomorrow's World about 50 years ago. Home cleaning things. We've still not quite perfected it. You can get those things that trawl around your house hoovering up, can't you?
I know. So they're at Dartford's Victory Way. Go check them out.
Fantastic. We've had a tweet from the lovely folks at New Appointments Group, and they say, a Vanilla Web, a Bird, Business Bunker, afternoon team. A big shout-out, please, to the fabulous folks at New Appointment Group, recruiting in Kent since 1975. And I believe nowadays they're based over at the Discovery Centre in Sandwich. So do give them a follow on the Twitter, NAG Recruitment, NAG, NAG Recruitment, New Appointments Group.
I like that.
Yeah. I guess that's Andrew. It doesn't say in the tweet, but it's Andrew, I guess, and his fabulous team. The wonderful folks at New Appointments Group, they really are great people. Do give them a follow on their Twitter. Do you know what we're going to do now?
Let's do it.
We're going to start talking to our next guest. And it's interesting because I want to introduce an old mate of mine for a start.
Is that me?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I prefer it was the other two, but unfortunately it's you. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I apologise.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back onto the Business Bunker Show. You have been on before, haven't you? Long time
about
ago.
5 years ago. Yeah. You like to space me out a bit.
Absolutely. I can't cope with you in too many dollops in one go. Yeah.
There's no answer to that.
Yeah, seriously. Absolutely. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back Mr. Howard Kendall. Howard is an entrepreneur, angel investor, and founder of the SDI Support Desk Institute. No.
Service Desk Institute. That's the word you're looking for.
Why would I know what it was called? I was only a director of it for a few years as well. I wouldn't know what it was called. The Service Desk Institute. And he's a bit of an expert on things like CRM, we were talking to Nick about earlier. So.
Well, yeah, I must admit I found that really interesting because what I do currently is I chair the British Standards Institute's Customer Service Speciality Group. So ISO 9000, which Bert was talking about earlier, that Channel FM had, we manage all the standards sitting underneath that about customer service and quality. So that's what I'm doing after my days of being the founder of the Service Desk Institute, which started in 1988, which is after I met you.
It was. Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Do you want to tell them when we met? That would be really sad.
What, 1982 or?
Well, I started working there in 1979, so I'm not sure.
It's going to be around there. He was trying to fudge that.
It was in the 70s, actually.
But we're both old, basically.
Yeah, that's basically what it boils down to.
We worked together at Citibank, basically.
Yeah,
we are seriously old.
Yeah, in the middle of the last century.
Yes, it was. But the interesting thing that I guess that I've done, and I didn't think it was that exciting, but because I worked on a help desk in those days, which was who you rang if you had a problem with your computer screen, and it really was only a computer screen in those days, then you rang someone like me and said, Howard, can you help?
Exactly, and they rang Howard because it used to be my job to ring, but I was so rude to people because I just was the head of tech support.
Well, no, you talked too much.
Yeah.
No, I just used to go, when they rang me
and said my computer screen didn't work, I'd go RTFM then.
And they go, read the flipping manual. And so I sort of made a job out of that, which was great because I didn't like proper jobs like working for Citibank and 3M and people like that who I work for. So I thought I'd form a group of people that ran help desks. So that's what I made my life's career. And then I sort of joined in the customer service thing a little bit later and ran really big conferences and published a magazine, wrote a book on customer service. So customer service has been a bit of a passion in my life. So I can speak with reasonable authority about the changes that you're experiencing, Nick, in customer relationship management. And one of the things that I must stop banging on the desk.
Yeah, that's
going
good.
In my
nice space, one. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, Paul. Sorry.
That's all right, mate.
I do stuff like
that. That's right.
But
Burr was going to come and slap you. That was
yeah.
all.
Okay. But the whole philosophy, you're right, has changed in terms of the way we work with customers in organisations because, there is no chance for you to impress people by them walking into your shop anymore. Yeah, you know, you have to start with your brand out there in the ether on the cloud or the internet. And, any website now has to impress people with price, with the brand offer and the quality before you even get near the product. Mm. And we're all reading these reviews on TripAdvisor and Amazon and all that sort of thing. So the world's changed dramatically and we are in control of what we buy. Mm. And if you go and buy a car, you actually know what price you want to pay before you go into the showroom, which is brilliant.
You're absolutely right. It's even the same when you sell a car, isn't it? Now, once upon a time, you used to take a car around to four or five dealers and they would offer you a different price. Now, you know what the price of the car is before you even go to the dealer, and the dealers don't haggle. They all just tell you the same price because everyone could just look it up. It really is a real change in the way we do things.
Yeah. So you do all the selection up front. And so to a certain extent, where you win over is not on the price. It's the service. As Nick was saying earlier, it's all about making that relationship a little bit personal, doing something a little bit extra. Mm. Yeah, whether you're selling cars or whether you're selling a cup of coffee and a piece of cake. Mm. And I think that's the key thing today is identifying with the customer and what they want from your customer experience. And the experience is what it's all about. Sure. So, it's a fascinating world out there.
Absolutely.
And, I do a little bit of work with that sort of stuff. And I also work with a sort of parallel organization called the Customer. No, it's not that.
See, I know what that one's called. Now, it's the Consulting Institute. See, I got that one right.
Consultation Institute, that's the word. Yeah. Or TCI, as it's affectionately known, which is sort of parallel. And it does consultancy and training on people that are doing consultation exercises, which might be on a new airport runway or sort of building a new power station in Rochester, for example.
You heard about that.
You heard it here first. Yes. No, it's nothing to do with me, honest. So I'm having a great – after getting out of running the Service Desk Institute, I'm having great fun doing lots of different things. Mm. But, I wasn't here particularly to talk about all the business stuff.
No, we weren't. So it was interesting, Howard. Thank you for that, and thank you for kind of – proving that I produced this show by linking the two items together.
Am I your link man?
You were my link man. Right. Yeah, I didn't tell you that, but you were. So thank you for doing that. But what I'd like to do now is, without being rude, because, I do like hearing from you, Howard, but I'd much rather hear from these two lovely young ladies you got next to you. So why don't you lead us into how you came to know these ladies, and then we're going to talk to them about what it is they do.
Yeah. Well, Lynn and Susie are great, and they're far more interesting than I am. And I've discovered them just recently as a later in life passion. That sounds wrong, doesn't it?
No, we'll go with that. I can see where you're coming from on that, Andy, don't worry.
But one of the things I don't think we do enough in this country is talk about sort of awkward things, you know, like sex and death.
Yeah.
And
not at the same time, obviously, because that would be necrophilia, and wouldn't want to go there.
That could be a bit dodgy, couldn't it?
Yeah.
But I'm a great believer in having a choice over how your demise is organised.
Yeah.
And what I don't want to do is get to whatever age I am and be dribbling and incontinent and having no quality of life. I'd much rather have a choice of how I manage my own death.
Absolutely.
And that's how I came across Dignity in Dying, which is what I'm obviously here to introduce primarily today. And I think, it's reflective of like the change in customer culture that we were talking about with Nick earlier. The way other countries are starting to look at this with a more open mind is much, much better. Places like Canada, California, Oregon in the States, Holland, Belgium, Switzerland, obviously. Yeah. I don't want to go to Dignitas and die. I want to be able to die here, but manage it in a much better way. Mm. We've all had experience of this.
Interesting, isn't it? You lost your dad just over a year ago?
Yeah, just over a year ago. And you lost your dad this
And I lost
year.
My dad a few weeks ago. With my dad passing, it was really interesting. My dad, who was disabled, he was deaf from birth. And he was terrified of getting ill. More than anything else, he just did not want to be ill in any way, shape or form. He was... Just as an aside, after he did die, it was a real pain because there were no medical records on him anywhere because he'd never been to a doctor in his life because he wouldn't go near one. So that they could, he had to have the full post-mortem because nobody knew anything about him because he was absolutely terrified of being ill. And my mum was terrified of going first because he wouldn't have looked after himself either. As it happened, luckily, and this sounds really awful to say luckily, he actually dropped dead on the spot. He wasn't remotely ill. He'd just been doing the gardening. He walked in, watched us smash Arsenal at football, and dropped dead. It couldn't have been more perfect if he planned it, and it almost looked like he did plan it. But for a lot of people, that doesn't happen. And I'm eternally grateful that he went the way he wanted. He was 88, so, he wasn't a young man. And he went the way that he wanted to, because I know how absolutely terrified he was of getting ill and not being able to manage his life at the end. Let's introduce these two ladies that we have here, Susie and Lynn. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Paul.
Why don't you tell us a bit about who you are and your organisation, and we'll take that from there. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm Lynn Owens Ward. I'm actually a psychotherapist, and I practice in Sevenoaks in Kent.
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, I should have warned you, shouldn't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, you should have warned me about this beforehand. Yeah, she's probably sitting there going, well, that's an interesting thing to say. But no, God, sorry.
No, not at all. I'm here on a completely different, in a completely different capacity. I too lost my mum a couple of years ago, and it was her last request, actually, that I get involved more deeply in an organisation that would help assist people, unlike your dad, who was lucky enough, as you say, he was at the end of his life and he just went quickly, no suffering, no long enduring pain, which is all part of why the organisation's been established, to help those who do want the choice to die in the way that they want to die, and to have that choice for themselves.
I'm sure everybody's heard this argument a million times, but it really is stunning that we will treat pets better than we will treat human beings, isn't it?
So many people say that to me. Yeah. You know, if a pet that you love, you'd put down, but we see people suffer and we don't give them the choice.
Yeah.
And it is a very difficult thing to talk about. As Howard was saying, we don't talk about this stuff enough. Mm. And this is also part of what the group's about, to encourage people to open up that conversation, to be bold. Culturally, we don't. Some cultures are better at supporting that. We don't in the UK. And the more we do, the more it becomes evident, the more it becomes something that is not buried and that we are more comfortable about talking about, and how then we do assist people in those last days of their life.
Absolutely. It's funny, isn't it? Because it's inevitable. far in the history of human beings, we haven't avoided it at any time. You know, so it's amazing we don't talk about it. Susie?
I think one of the main problems is that our politicians are completely out of touch with the general consensus, the British population. Rob Maris introduced a private members' bill in the House of Commons in September 2015. I went up to demonstrate outside the House. That bill was...
She looks the type, doesn't she? What do we want? We want it now. Yeah.
That bill got defeated by... It was two-thirds against and one-third for. My local MP is very much against. And what I feel is that that our politicians are completely out of touch with what's going on.
Can I ask you, Susie... people, I mean, I'm not a fan of politicians, as you may have gathered through some of my statements so far. But normally people have a position on something for a reason. And I'm not entirely sure what reason the politicians are putting forward to ignore this.
I think a lot of that is to do with the British Medical Association. And I think that really what we need is the BMA to change their tack.
Right.
I think everybody's afraid of upsetting the disabled lobby, the frail and vulnerable people.
I guess when you talk about it like that, there's sinister connotations in different areas of life, isn't there? Because throughout history there's been things, you know, I can't remember what it was called, back in the 20s there was a big movement about trying to plan populations. What do they call it? I remember what they called it. It'll come to me in a minute. But it was
euthanasia, probably.
Yeah, no. But
is that the word we're looking for?
No. It was genetic,
eugenics, wasn't it?
It was
where you looked at shortly after they started to uncover DNA, they started to look at the genetic inheritance of people and say, well, maybe we ought to terminate pregnancies and things like that and plan who was allowed to be born and who wasn't. It was a horrible thing. It became very popular for a long time in the 20s and 30s before it became completely discredited. And I know that's at the other end of the cycle, but people kind of moved away from that kind of thing on the grounds of, you know, it's a bit dodgy.
No, indeed. I think to talk about the campaign and
eugenics.
Yes, it was called. The campaign sort of would address some of what you've just raised, Paul, because they want to make sure that there are things in place so that it's completely secure and safe for the vulnerable people. So. The bill that they're trying to pass, which I can talk a little bit more about in a minute, is going to require two doctors and a judge to make sure that this person is of sound mind and is clear on their decision about what they want to do, to make sure to address those obvious concerns and anxieties that there are, that they may be wanting to bump off Auntie May because she's getting in the way.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is very, very central and very, very important to the campaign.
Can I ask a question at that point? And I'm kind of playing a little bit devil's advocate here, but so that we can draw out the questions. In terms of what you're proposing as a way forward here, is this only aimed at people that are still in a position to give their own consent for their own end?
Yes.
Because I guess, as you just rightly said, Linda, one of the things potentially is, you know, we all go, no, he's too laddy, he is, we need...
Yes.
And the guy's going, I'm not really, you know? And yes, you are.
Not mentally ill, not sound mind, so they're clear and capable of making a decision. Yeah.
So it can't be anyone else's decision.
No. Okay. And it has to be 6 months, so it has to be a terminal illness, and it also has to be if you've only probably got about 6 months to live.
Absolutely. Okay, so tell me a little bit about your organisation, Dignity in Dying, and what its aims are and where you are with it, and you know, anything else you need to tell me around it, yeah?
Dignity in Dying has been going since 1935.
Right, okay.
But more recently, they've had a much higher profile because there have been so many court cases and people challenging the law.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, the law is just... people are muddled, really, by what can happen and what can't happen. But the latest thing with Dignity in Dying in London is that they want to set up local campaign groups, and that's what Lynn and I are involved with.
Right, okay.
We have only been going... well, Lynn started it, and I joined her, and we've combined forces to really get things going. Mm. And in the States, certainly in Oregon, where assisted dying has been law since 1997, and so it's been going for 20 years, and they haven't had any problems with it at all. I think the Dignity in Dying want to get local campaign groups, because that's what worked in Oregon and in Washington State. So we already seem to be making inroads, and the momentum is already up and running locally in Kent. We demonstrated in Seven Oaks a few weeks ago and got a lot of people interested. And indeed, we, Dignity in Dying, reckon that 82% of the British population support assisted dying.
Yeah, that was a survey, wasn't it? Yeah. About a couple of years ago, when it was a sample of 5,000. And the vast majority of people do support this aim.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not surprising, really, is it? Because it's a fairly obvious thing. When you're faced with members of your own family that, you know, are in a position where they're not who you know they are, and they're, you know, suffering enormously, and asking you all the time, you know, to help them with that, it's really quite weird, isn't it?
I had a situation with my own dad, and he had terminal cancer. He wasn't being terribly well looked after, and he was in a huge amount of pain. And he said to me, I am just not going to be around for the last throes of this horrible disease. So I will be taking my own life. And he went off in his car and attached a pipe to his exhaust and killed himself with carbon monoxide. And I felt so angry about the fact that he had to do that and die alone.
Absolutely.
That I think that's what got me on the road to campaigning. And also, I'm a trained nurse, and I've seen many, many people die in hospital who really wish that they could end it all.
Sure.
I think.
So there's a political objection to this. Currently, there's a kind of medical objection, but the medical objection isn't on the grounds of medicine, it's on the grounds of culpability.
Well, many doctors actually are in favour.
I'm sure.
But it's the BMA, the overarching organisation, that make us, have made a particular stand on it.
And I'm assuming, and you might know, or if there's anyone from the BMA listening, they might want to tell me, but I'm assuming that their biggest issue with this is that they don't want the responsibility of doing it so much as whether they think it should be done or not.
No, indeed.
Is that fairly true?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I certainly think so.
Yes, and I feel there's a conflict with the Hippocratic Oath to preserve life.
Yeah, exactly. And I was going to ask about that. Is there a religious objection anywhere here as well?
Yeah, there is a bit of a religious objection, but it's mixed.
Yeah.
Archbishop Kerry, remember the Archbishop of Canterbury a little while ago?
Yeah.
He's a big fan of Dignity in Dying, as is Desmond Tutu.
Right.
Yeah. And Rabbi Jonathan Ramey.
So it's a very mixed response, as with the medical profession.
Right.
I mean, many people are in support of this, despite having sort of a religious or medical background. But I think the key thing is that the politicians simply don't seem to want to take notice of what people are telling them. Mm. Nothing particularly new there, but that's what we're looking desperately to change.
Maybe if I can talk a little bit about Noel Conway's case at this point.
That was the case
that was in the news last week, wasn't it?
So Noel Conway is a 67-year-old gentleman who has been diagnosed with motor neurone disease, which is a terminal diagnosis. He's actually not well enough at the moment to go to court, so his team of lawyers are representing him, or they did last week, as you quite rightly say. They were in court at the High Court all last week, arguing. So the general core of Noel's argument is that since the 1961 suicide bill, there is a blanket ban on any, it's illegal for any assisted suicide. So what he's arguing is it's a breach of his human rights. It breaches the Human Rights Act. So that's the kernel of the argument. And he then wants to, as if this goes through, then implement, have the opportunity to implement, or Parliament would implement some legislation to address that, to find some way forward with that.
It's an interesting argument, isn't it? Because on the face of it, it seems like a no-brainer, if you excuse that term of phrase. But, you know, why would you want to see anyone suffer? Yeah,
indeed.
I suppose, but no. But even so, you know, it's the choice of the sufferer and the sufferer alone that has chosen that. And I suppose there is some kind of medical. You know, we've seen this case just recently of Charlie Gard, the young boy. And so you get emotional arguments and you get medical arguments for things, and we have to be careful with that. You know, that you can be in a lot of pain, but the medical profession could say to you, yes, but we can manage this pain, we can do something about it. Whereas, you know, even I'm a big baby with things like that. I get a toothache and I want to end it all, you know. It's, so we have to be careful about that kind of thing, I guess.
But this law is so strict in its criteria that really there's no chance that, especially you've got two doctors and a High Court judge. Before, and you have to be terminally ill and you have to be mentally competent and it has to be your own personal choice.
Sure.
So the fact I feel the media mix this whole issue very much with the disabled and frail and elderly lobby, and it is different. It's not the same. It's such strict criteria that it can't easily be
flouted. Braces.
Absolutely.
It's odd, isn't it? It's one of those things. It's always difficult because there's other arguments. So, for instance, if you talk about things like capital punishment, if you look at surveys, allegedly, still a large proportion of the population is in favour on paper of capital punishment for certain crimes. Whether they'd actually vote for that if it came to a vote, I'm not entirely convinced. You know, it's easy to tick a poll and go, yeah, hang them, or whatever. But when it came down to it, I actually don't think we would, to be honest. But I guess politicians worry about things like that because they're forced to implement something that they really don't want to implement because, you know, people that don't have... It's a term that I'm using a lot lately, but people don't have skin in the game. Yeah, it's easy to say, yep, tick a box if it doesn't affect you. Yeah, if it does affect you, it's a different issue.
I think Dignity and Dying, you know, trying to be working with the case to, as it's proceeded, to talk about the kinds of things that could be put in place to ensure that this could be kept safe.
Yeah.
And no doubt it is a difficult decision. If Noel's case, we won't hear the outcome of that now, probably because they've gone into recess.
Oh, it's going to be the autumn.
Into the autumn, and it may well then go to the Supreme Court. But hopefully with some success. The next thing is the parliamentary debate.
Okay. So for your organisation, you're operating as a lobbying organisation primarily. Is that the case? You know, you're trying to lobby Parliament.
And so people become more aware of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think we obviously want to, we haven't been going long, but we've already made quite a lot of inroads and got people, local people, interested. We cover the whole of Kent at the moment, but Lynn and I are based in Sevenoaks. But we want more people to join us, more people who are interested, because in certainly in the States, that's how the law got changed, was the general public saying, we want to change in the law.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's worked well in Oregon for 20 years and they've had no problems with it.
sure.
means that it can work.
Have you guys talked to the various local MPs, Sir Michael Fallon and people like that?
I've written two letters to Michael Fallon and have been told that he doesn't support it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, our local Lib Dem, she does support it, our Lib Dem candidate. But no, Michael Fallon is
yeah, sure. I mean, again, the problem with things like this as well is that you have the political views and then the personal views of people as well.
Indeed.
So it is difficult, isn't it?
But these MPs hold clinics. You can go and sit with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no,
I would really, yeah.
We will be doing
yeah,
that.
Yeah, good, because that's really important. Even if it comes up with a no, then it's still something, okay?
Absolutely.
That's this is the next stage. Yeah. It's the next
making
stage.
Making some noise. I mean, I think this is it. It's about a united yeah. voice, making some noise, yeah. and eventually you do get heard.
And I think we're not asking politicians to change their personal choices. We're asking politicians to allow those of us who do want to go for assisted dying to allow us the freedom to do so. So I think that's really what it boils
well, down. Well, I think the key thing here is that MPs are there to represent us, not to represent their own personal views. And I think, yeah, what Susie's just indicated is exactly how it should be. Okay, I disagree with it, but I'm prepared, because of the groundswell of support, to support the bill.
Yeah.
But can I ask you, as a former nurse, what's your views on this, if you want to discuss them at all, obviously?
Oh, my goodness. I could go back. I feel like a ping pong ball, I suppose. I think that would be really fair to say, and a bat on each side of the table. Mm. I think it comes to, we could talk about this forever, but I've seen the most beautiful deaths and I've been at the most horrific deaths. You're right, there's the Liverpool pathway, which you can go down, but that's such an advanced step. I agree with you about the animals, but again, we are humans and there comes this understanding of faith and it's what you choose to believe. And I really believe that. I think if faith is deep in this understanding, if you're a religious person, then they would nowhere near go near this subject, because it's deep in their faith. But it comes to that. But I loved what you said, Susie. It's the freedom that you're looking for. You're not saying it's for everybody.
No,
you're just saying, allow me, actually allow me as a person to be able to make
my own choices.
To have that freedom of choice.
Yeah.
And that's what you're feeling absolutely strangled by. That's what
much,
I can see.
It's very much that whole thing of having that personal freedom to make our own decisions without interference from others.
Yeah.
And that's what you don't have.
Exactly.
Yeah. You don't have that.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point, Bert. It is a very good point. And we must remember this at all points here. This is a choice made by people that want to make that choice.
Yes.
It's in no way forced on anybody. We're not going to go, right, that's it, you're over.
Exactly.
Get out of the bed, we need it, kind of thing.
It's a complete personal choice. But also, I feel that those who decide not to go down that route should have a dignified and comfortable death. Mm. So if people do not want to take this route, allow them to to slip away in the best way possible with dignity.
Mm. It's such a beautiful topic to talk about, just to actually start talking about dying and how preparing that process. I think the thing is, and I do come from that medical background as well, and I go against the medical profession in lots of things, and I stand with them. But also, you've got it right. You're in fear. You know, you've got procedures. If you do not follow them, it's me who's going to go to jail. Let's be really honest. Me as a person who absolutely stood there, took an oath, said, you know, that I've spent years building this love and care, and all of a sudden I've made that wrong point. And then, you know, so it's really difficult. And I've seen people where at the desperation, desperate moments create a totally different outcome. And that's where you want to catch them before that desperation comes in. Yes. So emotion is huge.
Well, we believe that one person a fortnight from Britain goes to Switzerland. Mm. And I feel that we should have the choice to die in our own country with our friends and our family around us.
Because, of course, people are having to go to Switzerland well before they would normally choose to do that if they remained here. They could stay with their families for longer.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting.
It's a very emotive subject. There's a lot of discussion to be had on it. Sadly, we're running out of time.
Could Lynn give our details?
Yeah, no, I'm just about to ask for that because clearly, you know, anybody that wants to support you and wants to find out more about what you're doing, we need to help them do that. So if you want to give us your website address or however people can get in contact with your organisation to one, find out more, or two, register to support you, or what, you know, ask for advice and support. How do they do that?
The email address is did.kent.group@gmail.com.
Okay. So did@kent.group.
Stop the dots. did.kent. I'm getting confused now.
did@kent.group. We'll find it and put it on the Kent Business Radio website. Yeah, we'll put it on the website. Do you have a website for your organisation as well?
We're just a Kent group.
Right.
The overarching group does have an extensive website as well, and our details are on that website too.
Okay, fine. We will post the overall website on there so that people can find out about the organisation in general and about what it's all about, and then we'll post your link too so that they can get in contact with the Kent group.
Lovely.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Paul.
Lynn, Susie, thank you so much for joining us and talking about a very emotive subject. Howard, thank you so much for introducing to that and also being our link with Nick.
Oh, I love being
here. Great. We've had a follow-up tweet from Laura.
Yeah.
Who says, lol, laughing out loud, I am fit and I am an ex-rugby player and I was a flanker for London Welsh. So thank you for that, Laura.
And also, Joe Allsop's put in here as well, is how we live and how we die. Great discussions. So, she's put here, subjects not to be avoided. So it's great to grab attention, highlight it, talk about it. Some people won't like it. Some people go, oh, my gosh, you absolutely were daring enough to say that. So so you're getting lots of feedback from it.
Cool. No, absolutely. Sorry, we're getting loads of tweets.
I know, it's just coming in. It's like, whoa.
Loads of different stuff coming in.
Great show today. Yeah, it's good.
Hi, Vanilla Web. Hi, Bird. Great Business Bunker show today. It's very interesting discussions. Can you remind everybody to tune into the Bunker Extra show on Friday? Of course I can, my darling. that's the Bunker Extra show on Friday, which is a follow-on show from today's show. Because we're just so busy that we needed another show. It's on Friday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., presented by the lovely Amanda Flanders and her little group of co-hosts, Molly Moodle, Gemma Fairhay, and the gang. So do tune in to the Business Bunker Extra Show at 11 o'clock on Friday. Do you know what we're going to do now?
Let's do it.
I think we'll do the Federation of Small Business News Roundup. What do you reckon?
Channel Radio News Update.
It's that part in the show where we bring you some news from the Federation of Small Business. I'm going to run through some of the things that they've got coming up. You can then go into the Kent Business Radio website, click on the FSB tab, and you can find the booking things here. So coming up, local events, Tunbridge Wells Civic Centre proposals, a briefing for local businesses. That's taking place tomorrow, Wednesday the 26th of July, from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. and it's at Tunbridge Wells Borough Council, Royal Tunbridge Wells, and it's a business briefing on their proposed new developments in the town centre. Guess who's going to be there?
Me. Oh, I am.
What about that? I'm not going to be at the next one, though, although I'd like to be, but they banned me. It's at the Women in Business in Dartford, and it's on Tuesday the 1st of August.
Guess who's there?
It's you.
I'm there. Yeah, I'm Bird. Speaking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you can hear Bird speak at that. So she got in on that one instead of me. There's the Women in Business Dartford, Tuesday the 1st of August, 10 a.m. to 12 at the Base Point Business Centre in Dartford with guest speaker Bird on a bike. And then there's the FSB Connect Networking in Ashford on Wednesday the 2nd of August from 10:30 a.m. until 12:30. That's at the Farrier's Arms. They held the first one of those last month, and apparently it was a knockout. It was absolutely brilliant, so do get along to that. It's at the Farrier's Arms, Ashford, on Wednesday the 2nd of August, 10:30 a.m. And then there's the rebate, the reprobate special, Slope Off Friday.
Oh, I've never gone.
No, you haven't.
They've never invited me.
You haven't
never
got the stamina.
They never invite me ever.
You haven't got the stamina. I've never been to one either.
That's because we don't drink.
Yeah, and that's why. Friday, the 1st of September, is Slope Off Friday, a relaxed lunch, they can say that again, with local business owners. To book, contact andrew.knott@fsb.org.uk to replace your, to reserve your place.
Yeah, it's so relaxed. It takes 12 hours.
It takes 12 hours to have
to
lunch.
Have a lunch.
They started lunch at 12 o'clock. I got a text from Jules at 2 a.m. going, "We're still having lunch. We just had another bottle of Prosecco. Can you come and pick me up? I can't get home."
I don't know how she does it.
I know. How they do it, I don't know. And then there's FSB Connect Maidstone Networking on Wednesday the 13th of September at 4:30 p.m. And that's at the Metro Bank store, the new bank store on Week Street, 10 Week Street. And the guest speaker at that is Tracy McRobert.
Nice.
So, do get along to those.
Calling on all entrepreneurs with disabilities. Are you an entrepreneur with a disability? Have you got experience of helping members of staff with disabilities or taking on new employees with a disability? If so, we want to hear from you. Please get in touch with David Moore Crouch.
Fantastic. Thank you. I've got one in yellow.
Oh, you want to see what you've given me?
There's a new website that connects small firms with business schools. The website has been launched to connect small business managers and entrepreneurs with leading business academics, providing advice and support. The Small Business Charter website offers access to advice written by experts, as well as a tool that allows businesses to search for business schools based on their area of expertise. The site also helps find local and regional support and networking events in specific areas. And the website is https://smallbusinesscharter.org. So that's smallbusinesscharter.org.
New product launched to replace crippling late payments. Around one third of all payments to small businesses in the UK are late, often having a devastating impact on them. A new debt management product has been launched by the FSB for small businesses and self-employed, helping recover debt owed without charging fees or commission. Read more about the newly launched product here. FSB, it's /media-centre/ go on to our site and have a look, and
it's under the FSB tab. Yeah. If you want to find out how the changes again to the GCSE grading system might impact your business, or whether you just lost the will to live, or you know, it's a close call. GCSEs in England are changing again, with the new system graded from 9 to 1. With 9 being the top grade. To help business people prepare and learn more about the changes, Ofcal have online resources available, including videos and information for employers. And you can find that on the Ofqual, O-F-Q-U-A-L, LinkedIn page or on their webpage. Or if you want more information on the changes, you can contact the Head of Education and Skills Policy at the Federation, Annie Pete.
And they've got to do it quick, because you've got 3 weeks, because these new results come out in 3 weeks' time. That's crazy.
Don't even get me started on that.
It's madness. My poor little man was in it. It's just awful.
Utter nonsense,
Making tax digital reforms are a lifeline for small firms. This week, the government made significant changes to the government's Making Tax Digital programme. The Treasury announced the current threshold for mandatory quarterly tax reporting will be increased to the VAT threshold of 85,000, meaning the exemption of small business firms, FSB's top priority for reform. Responding, Mike Cherry described the changes as a real lifeline for small firms already facing a hugely challenging economic climate. What do you think, Paul?
It's another government U-turn. It was necessary because I hadn't thought it through again. We're going to have to do digital reporting, but implementing it for very small firms up front was just too much.
Yeah.
You know, in the same year as introducing workplace pensions, a rise to, in national minimum wage, the implementation of a living wage, all the other stuff that they've put onto very small businesses, and then trying to make digital reporting was just all too much in one go.
Mm.
So they've had to back out of that.
I mean, I've got an expert clinic here Wednesday the 26th from 6 till 9 at Gillingham Golf Club Woodlands. That's at Gillingham. And it's open to all local small businesses, sole traders and self-employed. And that's an FSB expert clinic. Get yourself along.
Cool. And I think that brings us to the end of our FSB news update.
Channel Radio News Update.
I've had a tweet from Tracy Ferguson who says, what a beautiful, poignant discussion Howard, Lynn and Susie put around dignity and dying. So thank you, Tracy. Lynn, you wanted to say something?
I've found my email.
Oh, have you? Go on, go for it.
May I? So that's did.kent.group@gmail.com.
Fabulous.
Thank you.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. We will still put it on the website anyway so that people can find you.
Yeah.
And there is already a link, because I just checked, to the major website for the organisation overall. That kind of brings us to the end of the show. I just want to tell you what's coming up later on Channel Radio. At 4 o'clock, we have Natalie Benaik, Madame Benaik, with the Kent Creative Live Show. And on this week's show at 4 p.m, there's a moving chat between Joe Dyer from Animate Arts and poet Stefan Gambrell. Stefan Gambrell. Can't say it. So that's the Kent Creative Live Show, 4 p.m. on channelradio.co.uk. At 5 p.m, we have the ladies' favourite, Mr. Craig Avery with the stripy socks. He will be on with his celebrity interview and music show. At 7 o'clock on Channel Radio, we have Mr. Joey Whaler with a rockabilly show. At 9 o'clock, for some obscure reason, we still have I Was Lord Kitchener's Valet, a show focusing on the eventful year of 1967. And then, of course, as always, on Channel Radio on a Tuesday night, we finish off with...
It's Club Culture with Boy George.
One, two, three, get down!
Cool drum beat at the squidgy bass, I give you Vanilla Ace, and it rhymes. That means I'm right on time. Welcome to Club Culture, where I control my very own dance universe. 1 hour or more of grooving delectables for your disco pleasure. I'm Boy George.
It's 1 hour of delectable, delicious dance music. It's Club Culture with Boy George on Channel Radio.
As always, on a Tuesday evening, we finish off with the glorious Mr. Boy George at 10 o'clock with the Club Culture Show. Thank you so much for listening to the Business Bunker Show. I want to say a massive, massive thank you to our guests today, Mr. Nick Bird, Howard Kendall, Lynn Owens and Susie
G.
Oh, I like that. Susie
you
G.
sound like a rapper, Susie
yeah,
G.
Susie G, yeah. Love yeah. It. Yeah.
I'm to reinvent myself.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much, thank all you. Of you, for participating in the show. And thank you to my lovely co-host, the gorgeous Bird, Bird on a Bike.
It's been a pleasure.
And we will be back with you next week. Have a fabulous week. Bye now.
Bye.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.